Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
It's Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson. Tom talks about life, showbiz, art, and more from the Wilson World Studios, located in California, about a half-hour drive through traffic to the sparkling Pacific Ocean. Here's Tom.
Hey, it's Big Pop Fun time. Magical sleigh ride going strong. It's the 100th episode, so I wrote this opening song. Hey, hello, folks. Here we go. Howdy, hey, hi there. Open the show. I've been in movies, been on TV, and that makes me a celebrity. Tom Wilson starting the podcast. He is very important. Kapow. Excitement popping in the air. Lose your worries, forget your cares. You people at home shouldn't be sitting here, because sometimes I spit when I sing, and you could sell it on eBay. The microphone, she's my lover. I know just what to do. I'm a guy you've seen on TV, and face it, people on TV are better than you. People on TV are just better than you. Come on, Miley Cyrus, Kim Kardashian, Anderson Cooper, and me. I've survived in showbiz, I paid my dues. You gotta give me credit, you can't refuse. Hey, I know a guy who knows Tom Cruise. Yes, I'm that connected, yeah. Back to the Future, been in Freaks and Geeks. I was in that movie called The Heat. Hey, my resume's longer than 50 feet. Well, longer than anybody else's podcast you listen to. You might think I'm self-centered. You think I'm on an ego trip. Well, I don't care, because I'm famous. Hey, and that's more important than relationships. Fame is more important than relationships. Tom Wilson, he's sort of famous. He has lost all of his friends. Big whoop. Tonight is gonna be the best. A showbiz party, a big success. Just lower your standards. Start expecting less. And let those lowered expectations start with me. I have asthma, yeah. Welcome, everybody, to the party. Welcome to the 100th episode of Big Pop Fun. I'm Tom Wilson, the host of Big Pop Fun, the very podcast you're listening to. If you're new, welcome to show 100. If not, you have a lot of listening to do to actually catch up with me. So go back. Yes, pause right now. Go back, download the 99 other episodes of this magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we cuddle up in the sleigh, look at each other and say, "What? Hey, we're still here listening to this." And that is good. That is good. Thanks so much for listening. All of you who I've heard from, who enjoy the podcast, I appreciate it very much. I appreciate it very much. I'm listening to myself through some headphones that I'm going to take off because my ears are clogged because it's spring. I will not complain to you as I have before on the podcast, but if Tom becomes clogged, if his lungs stop, that means it's springtime, and I know it's still snowing, and I know it's still 20 degrees around the country, but believe me, the plants are going because my lungs, nose, ears, everything tell me I'm back. I'm back. The podcast is brought to you by art. Please support artists wherever you are, in whatever they're doing. Go to a show. Go to a concert. Tip that guy or girl who's playing the guitar at the coffee place. Throw in a couple bucks. Because artists are trying to make it everywhere, and I think it's important that we support them. Support the arts by buying art and buy my book, The Masked Man. Guess what, podcast friends and friends of the earbud, all friends of the earbud, my book is now an audiobook. If you like these mellow tones, please feel free to go to Amazon, it's on the ACX platform there. You can find, through audible.com, through look it up, The Masked Man by Tom Wilson, still 5 stars on Amazon, and please pick up the audiobook and listen to me read my book to you over a span of some, I don't know how long it is, 11 hours, 12 hours of me talking. And who really, who doesn't want that? I know I do, because I listen to this voice all the time, although I really can't hear it as much as I do sometimes because my ears are clogged. I'm back from Columbus, Ohio. Ladies and gentlemen, a fine, fine city in the middle of Ohio, home of the Ohio State University, the Buckeyes, but also home to Nationwide Insurance, which was where, yeah, I did an event for Nationwide Insurance. And boy, I hadn't paid close attention to Columbus. I've been there several times, and you get off and you're just, you know, you say, well, how do I get to the hotel? Well, you'll see the Nationwide building as you come into Columbus, and then you'll go by the Nationwide Arena, you know, where the Blue Jackets hockey team play, and then you go to Nationwide Plaza. That will take you into downtown to Nationwide Plaza, right near, yeah, it's right under the Nationwide building. Well, what street is the Hyatt on? Oh, it's on Nationwide. They have taken over. Nationwide's taken over Columbus. They're on your side, Columbus. They're actually in your middle, too, because they're there everywhere. Nationwide has taken over middle Ohio. In fact, in Columbus, you're not allowed to be called a farmer. They don't call them farmers. They call them Nationwide Vegetable Enablers. Engineering. They don't have all-state athletes in that. No, Nationwide wouldn't have that. You can't be all-state. You are a Nationwideian sportsman of note. I don't know. Nobody's allowed to name their baby Flo. And you get my point. Okay, so I'm back from Columbus, Ohio, where I spent a delightful 12 hours at O'Hare Airport in Chicago as flights were canceled and everything. Boy, it's been snowy, hasn't it? It's that global warming. I was in Phoenix. Speaking of global warming, well, speaking of just not global, but very like city warming, state warming, well, Arizona, southern state warming. I was in Phoenix, which was very warm and lovely. Stand Up Live. Thanks to everybody in southern Arizona, and all those. Some people came from kind of far to see me at Stand Up Live there in downtown Phoenix, which is a beautiful site there. Beautiful venue for stand up. Miley Cyrus was performing right across the street at the U.S. Airways Arena. So if you wanted to see 13-year-olds with back tattoos, that was the place. I wish I was kidding. No, there were a lot of children walking to the concert with mommy, and the kids were tatted up, which is very unusual for young kids. But I'm back. I'm going to Indianapolis. Look me up and see me out there. I perform. When I was a kid, I loved Flip Wilson, because he was performing on talk shows and everything, and he had his own show, the Flip Wilson Show. They named it after him. But I saw a group called the Ace Trucking Company on the Flip Wilson Show. This was the earliest inklings of kind of improvisation and sketches and these things that were happening on stage. And you know, with the very beginnings of the overthrow of that kind of older style of comedy that you would see on The Tonight Show. And Fred Willard was a very, very integral part of that. He was in the Ace Trucking Company. I saw this young guy with black hair, seemed so funny and so kind of off the cuff. And then I saw the Ace Trucking Company on things like the Midnight Special. And then I saw Fred on Fernwood Tonight with Martin Mull in the 70s. And then I had never met Fred, but I certainly admired Fred. I'd seen him on all of these things. I was very proud because I saw the Ace Trucking Company, you know, on the Flip Wilson Show and on talk shows, as I told you. And my name went on to the wall outside the Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard, I actually went up near the spot where it said the Ace Trucking Company on the wall of the Comedy Store. And for whatever reason, I was proud of that because I felt, wow, the Ace Trucking Company, Fred Willard, those people. I'm near them on the wall of the Comedy Store on Sunset. Then I read one of David Mamet's books. David Mamet, great playwright and writer and thinker on things cultural and theatrical. And he wrote about the magic that he felt at the theater. When he first went to the theater and he felt that when the lights go down and the hair on the back of your neck stands up. But he was talking about it when he saw Fred Willard performing in Second City in Chicago. So there's, you know, so Fred Willard is an historic figure of comedy. I ended up doing a movie with Fred called High Strung with Jim Carrey and Steve Odekirk that I don't think has ever shown up on DVD. But I did a movie with Fred, great guy. He's just, it's wonderful to meet him. And I didn't gush or anything. I was just nice, but such a, just an unassuming and gentle and nice guy. And of course, just flat out funny. Anyway, I saw he and his wife Mary last week at Flappers Comedy Club. Flappers is a comedy club in Burbank, California. And Fred was emceeing a show to benefit Fred Stoller. Fred's being sued by someone who thought that he said something bad about him. And that's the, you know, that's what's happening now, I think. The stand-up comedian, I think, let's say any person with a microphone, that person in public with a microphone on stage is the canary in a coal mine as far as freedom of speech goes. And they're being attacked everywhere. And Fred is being sued and has to hire lawyers and everything. So we did a show for Fred. Fred Willard was hysterical, and Tom Kenny, who plays SpongeBob SquarePants, was there, and Charlie Murphy was there, and many comedians were there to support Fred, of course, but to support, hey, the First Amendment, you know, I mean, I don't know, it's getting interesting out there, because you're really. I don't know if you're allowed to say all the things that are on your mind anymore. And I'm not talking about you, Canada, because you don't have the freedom of speech. But that's okay. It's weird. But I had a good time at the show. I took a lot of pictures with people. It's weird. I don't know what's happening or whether the super saturation point of the movies on TV and cable are becoming. But actually, I'm getting more famous. I don't mean more famous because of my 0.03 seconds in the heat or something. I mean, just that facial recognition. Hey, you're the guy from the thing. So it's an odd thing. It's an odd thing. I don't even know what my point is, but it's the 100th episode. I thought the 100th episode would be more schmaltzy than this. I thought it would be kind of, I don't know, bigger. Some of the guests that I've had on the show, some friends have called and said, hey, let me interview you for the 100th episode. Or you know what you should do, Tom? You should do one of those shows. Like, remember when the TV shows, they get tired at the end of the season and they do one of those flashback shows and then everyone just sits around the living room and just says, hey, remember that time when and you just replay the footage that we've already shot? You should do a show like that where you say, boy, remember when Mark Hamill talked about George Lucas and put that on? Or remember when Blake Clark talked about his Vietnam experience and put that on? But I just didn't want to work that hard and go through all the tapes and everything to create a magnificent magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder for the 100th episode. So I decided to just turn this on because I've been behind. I know I've been delayed in snowbanks. I've been traveling. I've been doing stuff. I'm not on a hammock eating bonbons thinking, I don't think I'll do a Big Pop Fun this week. Let them just entertain themselves. No, I've been running around like a little chicken with my head cut off. But my point is, completely self-servingly, I'm more famous now. What? Okay, tangent over. I was at the gym a while ago. Speaking of being famous, hey, one time when everyone around us missed it, and I thought, You know, somebody should take a picture of this because it's kind of weird, but only in LA. I was at the gym and I was on one of the weight machines. And at my gym, nobody, believe me, it's not a special gym with really famous, you know, Brad Pitt does not work out at my gym. Nobody big, but just, you know, many, many character actors and people that I've known for a while. So at the gym that day was an actor named Hank Garrett. Now, Hank played a very, very seminal bad guy role. He was the mailman in the movie 3 Days of the Condor with Robert Redford, who comes and he's delivering mail. Robert Redford recognizes that he's not wearing mailman shoes. And he pours a pot of coffee on Hank's character, the evil mailman. And the evil mailman takes out a machine gun and you know, and just sprays Faye Dunaway's apartment and everything. And Robert Redford finally, of course, kills him because, you know, he's Robert Redford. Robert Redford kills guys, and Hank Garrett, the character actor, the mailman guy, dead, because that's how movies work. But Hank Garrett was at the gym that day. And so was an actor named Mark Metcalf, who was in a Twisted Sister video years ago, I remember, but he was very famous for playing Doug Niedermeyer in the movie Animal House. Niedermeyer, the horrible guy who's mean to the Delta House, who is another historic bad guy in a classic comedy movie. And me. So you know what happened? It's the 100th episode. This is very special stuff. We got on our weight machines all together, three in a row. Yes, the mailman from 3 Days of the Condor on the chest machine, the Niedermeyer from Animal House on the biceps, and me on the leg machine, the guy who played, I played Moose on a very special episode of The Facts of Life. Three gym machines in a row. Nobody was there to take a picture, but I am a witness. It actually happened. The 100th episode. Hang in there. I'll come to a point. These episodes are always weird when I turn it on, but I just turned it on and go, you know, an actor who should be more famous, but who's done very well is Paul McCrane, a Philadelphia actor that I've known for many years. And I thought of Paul because of the American movie classics Rocky Marathon. Yeah, Rocky's been on Marathon. Well, not just the Rocky. I mean, Rocky, Rocky 2, Rocky 3, Rocky 4, Rocky 5. I haven't seen Rocky Balboa on. Now, of the Rocky movies, let's face it. Can we admit to each other? The ones with numbers, if it's a Rocky movie with a number after it, it's not a good movie. But two of them are without numbers. That's Rocky and Rocky Balboa. Those are actually, well, one, Rocky is a great movie. And Rocky Balboa is a good movie. I know Bill Burr is a very famous podcaster with he had a very famous diatribe against a very low common denominator Philadelphia audience where Bill, you know, ripped Rocky a new one. And as a Philadelphian, I have to come to Rocky's defense because Rocky, for Philadelphians, is a very important movie. I mean, I saw Rocky in the theater when it came out back during our nation's bicentennial. That's right, 1976, in the theater. My friend Jim Holton, we stood up from the movie. I leaned down to pick up my jacket, and Jim was shadow boxing and punched me right in the face. Heart like split my lip, like bleeding all over the place at the end of Rocky. So, yeah, we were on a movie going kick then. We saw the Warriors together too. The Warriors. Hey, Warriors, come out to play. It was about a gang in the city in New York that had to fight their way, bop our way back to Coney. That's what they had to do. But Jim and I went to the Warriors. I mean, just the middle of a terrible neighborhood in Philadelphia, very dangerous. So we watched this movie, about gangs and fighting, and the lights come up in the theater, and we are just trying to be as small as humanly possible to let the entire audience walk out of the theater because it was dangerous. Anyway, Rocky II came when I was an actor. I was acting. I was a young actor, and I was trying to get in movies. I had no idea how to get in movies, but Rocky II was filming in Philadelphia. And there were small parts, but I didn't know like how you got in movies. You know, there was a part of a kid in a body cast who's coming out of the hospital when Rocky's coming out of the hospital after being beaten up by Apollo Creed. And the kid's in a body cast in a wheelchair and just goes, "Hey, yo, Rocky, sign my head." And, you know, Rocky autographs the kid's head. The part was played by my friend Paul McCrane, Philadelphia actor. How did he get in a movie? How do you get in a movie? I had no idea. Until at the place I was studying acting, the Philadelphia Company, I had a shot. Because they could, this might be story fugue, story fugue, story fugue, story fugue, where the stories fold into a story that I've previously told. And for that, I don't apologize. It's not repetitive. It's a fugue. There was a cattle call in Philadelphia on the wall of the Philadelphia Company, the theater company that I was working at, for a movie called Hot Lunch. Joy Todd was the casting director of this movie, Hot Lunch. And it was at the Philadelphia Company. And the guys were asked to do a monologue from the William Inge play Dark at the Top of the Stairs. I already knew the monologue. I had memorized it for acting classes. I knew it. So day comes for this audition for the movie. Big movie, Hot Lunch, shot in New York, directed by Alan Parker, who directed Midnight Express. Yeah, the drug smuggling Turkish prison movie. I know that became very famous. But at that time, hey man, that was art, intensity, Turkish prisons. Yeah. It was a communal audition. So everyone, it was, you know, this was, I guess, the 70s. So it was that vibe, or maybe they just didn't have the room to hold so many people, but they had the audition in a theater where everyone sat there and watched your audition. All guys getting up there. Some of them, most of them did that Dark at the Top of the Stairs reading. Some, you know, it was an audition. So some did other things. Some said, "I would like to sing, you know, Good Ship Lollipop." Or, you know, people do unusual things at auditions. They're trying to be memorable. They're not very memorable. They kind of blew it. But everyone's getting up. And I haven't seen many auditions in my time, like a communal audition like that where people are reading and stuff. But at every one, when a lot of people read for something, I really like it. Because not that I think, oh, I'm the best actor in here, but I do think, you know, I'm not that bad because that wasn't that great at all. So everyone's auditioning and they're reading the Dark at the Top of the Stairs thing. It's I always feel strange when I go to a party. I forget, boy, I haven't thought about that one in a long time, so I don't know the monologue. But I went up, did the audition, did my monologue, and Joy Todd stood up, and she's writing down some things on a piece of paper, and I was the first one. It was like American Idol when you get the yellow paper. She says, "All right, Tom. On Tuesday, be in New York City to audition personally with the director, Alan Parker." You get a call back. And the whole place screamed like it was American Idol. Like, well, one of us is going to New York to audition for Alan Parker. You know, it's back slaps and all that stuff. And I went to New York City. It was very exciting, but it was really my first audition for anything of, you know, I mean, there were some auditions for plays, but it was my first audition for anything like a movie with a big director. I went into Alan Parker's office in an office building in New York City that I'd taken the train up. I wore my nice slacks and nice shoes and stuff to look okay. And I was physically shaking. I mean, it was the most nerve-wracking thing I've ever been through. And I did that swallow thing as soon as I started the – he says, well, very nice to meet you, Tom. And we chatted for a while. And I don't know what I chatted, but I was a deer in the headlights. And he says, well, why don't you try the monologue? And I did that – I always feel weird when I did that thing. So I didn't get the part in Hot Lunch. They changed the name of the movie, in fact, from Hot Lunch – and they called the movie Fame. That's right. And who got the part that I auditioned for in the big movie Fame, directed by Alan Parker in New York City? Paul McCrane. Philadelphia actor Paul McCrane. Slowly I turned, step by step. Look, he was great. Paul is a fantastic actor. He went on to do RoboCop. You know him from ER. Many, many, many things. And we've both done very well. And he's a very nice guy. But Paul was in Fame. And he was spectacular in Fame. But more important than that, Paul was in Rocky. I mean, he was in the Rocky saga. He was in Rocky II. Sure, it's not very good. Stallone did it, sure, but he wrote it and directed it and whatever he ended up doing. But Paul McCrane was in Rocky. I mean, Rocky and Philadelphia are inseparable. That's, you know, it's a guy, the guy, Rocky, the guy who doesn't, you know, he doesn't have to win, but just the guy who wants to know he could hang in there with the best. I mean, Rocky goes to Apollo Creed's hospital room to ask him, hey, did you give me your best, Apollo? He says, yes. Going the distance, getting up there with the best and holding your own. So Mr. T and Dolph Lundgren and Brigitte Nielsen and, you know, and even for a while Sylvester Stallone sort of made Rocky into a punchline. But not to me. The kid from Philadelphia who was just curious if what he had, you know, that thing that Paul McCrane had, what he'd worked so hard on was good enough. And I don't know. At this point, I'm still not sure. And the amazing thing, though, the Rocky is still steeped in Philadelphia culture. The art museum there on the river in Philadelphia has, as I'm sure you know, a long series of stone steps. These are called the Rocky Steps. There's a big statue of Rocky that's down at the bottom of the steps with his hands upraised, and still to this day, when I'm in Philadelphia, you can see the school buses are coming to take children to see the magnificent collection of the Philadelphia Museum of Art. The kids are there to run up the steps on snowy days, rainy days, sunny days. Doesn't matter. They run up the steps, do some jumping jacks at the top, and just jump up and down with their hands upraised. The funny part is, most of them have never seen Rocky, have never heard of Rocky. For some reason, they know that those steps represent that exaltation of doing your best. And they do. They run up the stairs and they jump up and down with their hands upraised, overlooking the skyscrapers in Philadelphia there. Yeah, the cityscape has changed a lot since Rocky shadowboxed it, 39 years? Wow, long time. The cityscape has changed a lot. But the school children still get out of their buses and jump up and down like Rocky. like us. So get out there and do one-armed push-ups. You start without me because I probably can't do them. But go do some one-armed push-ups and wear those gloves with no fingers. A dog like Stallone, you know? Thanks for listening to the 100th Big Pop Fun. I can't believe it's been 100 episodes. And I know some of you can't either. But I appreciate your listening very much. I really do. I thank Chris and Katie, everybody at Nerdist Industries, who just gave me a shot, who had this, you know, who had the ability to put it on there and said, sure, Tom, just send us some stuff. Yeah, we'll put it up there. And to Emily Wilson, who's helped me so much with producing it. Thanks to all the people who've come out to all my shows and say, I listen to the podcast and I really enjoy it. And I say, you do? I'm sorry. I'm trying not to say that. I'm trying to say thank you. And to McPherson Guitars for helping me out on the live show. Come out and see a live show. I bet you'll like it. It comes with my guarantee. If you don't have a fabulous time at my live show, that's a you problem. But I look forward to talking to you again. As I said, if you want to hear more of this magnificent voice, just go online and download The Masked Man, the audiobook. But I do thank you, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Nerdist.com